Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, July 13, 2015. The price of clean water in Juba Town is becoming unaffordable as the cholera outbreak continues to claim more lives.
We have seen skyrocketing prices of water, food and commodities. At the end, people are struggling to put food on the table and are paying less and less attention to clean water.
And a South Sudanese police officer turns his gun on his colleagues, killing three and wounding others over the weekend.
There was misunderstanding between two police men, and one of them shot the colleague dead. And the situation now is okay. Everything is okay.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The aid agency Oxfam says the rising price of clean water in South Sudan is putting more people at risk from cholera outbreak. As VOA's Gabe Joslow reports, this is just one of the ways the 19-month-long civil conflict has deepened the humanitarian crisis in the country.
The World Health Organization says 33 people in South Sudan's capital have died from cholera since June out of 790 confirmed cases. The origin of the epidemic has been traced back to a displaced persons camp in Juba, where crowded, unsanitary conditions likely fueled the outbreak. But Oxfam country director Zlatko Gegic says the economic impact of civil conflict has made the situation worse.
We have seen skyrocketing prices of water, food and commodities. At the end, people are struggling to put food on the table and are paying less and less attention to clean water. Not because they want to, but because they have been put in such situation.
Prices for basic goods have risen in South Sudan as 19 months of violence has disrupted oil production, the key driver of the economy. Gegic says many families in Juba typically rely on private suppliers for clean water, and the rising price of fuel has increased the cost to consumers.
Those poorer neighborhoods of Juba are hit hardest, and some of those families have no means to buy any clean water anymore. So they are resorting to dramatic measures like drinking water from untreated resources, sometimes straight from the River Nile.
Cholera is transmitted through contaminated water or food. It is treatable in most cases, but can be deadly. Gegic says an intervention by aid agencies and South Sudan's Ministry of Health has helped control this outbreak, but says long-term investment in clean water and health infrastructure is needed to prevent a repeat of the situation. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Nairobi.
Five security officers were killed when one of their fellow police officers opened fire at a police post in Juba. A senior law enforcement official says the suspected shooter has been arrested and will be prosecuted. From Juba, Mungume Dev Surakarinj files this report.
Central Equatorial State Police Commissioner Major General Said Shaul Lom says four police officers and one prison warden were killed in the shooting. He says the incident took place yesterday morning at a police station in Koromla, about 2 kilometers from Juba town.
There was misunderstanding between two police men, and one of them shot the colleague dead. And the situation now is okay. Everything is okay.
Lom says other police officers responded swiftly when the shooting began. The suspected shooter has been arrested and will be charged with the murders of his colleagues. Lom says no one was wounded in the shootings. He declined to go into detail about what could have been a motive for the deadly incident, saying only that it was triggered by a social issue. Lom says an investigation has been opened and is ongoing. Lom says there's been a recent spike in gun violence in Juba. He is appealing to citizens for help in preventing these types of crimes. Lom says his office has begun door-to-door disarmament campaigns to reduce the number of firearms in the hands of civilians.
I'm telling the public that, please, if there is any criminal with you there, or if there is any, or any one of the policemen who is cooperating with criminals, you just inform me. I want to tell the policemen any policeman in the Central Equatorial State, your job is to keep the security, to implement the laws, to keep the properties.
Lom says police officers will be among those whose weapons will be taken if they are found to be carrying them unlawfully. Lom notes that police officers are only authorized to carry weapons when they are on duty. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
And in Lake State, officials say more than 30 people were killed and dozens of others injured during two separate attacks over the last 3 days. Officials say security forces have been deployed in the affected areas to track down and arrest the perpetrators and prevent further attacks. Jock Ayom Majak, Lake State Law Enforcement Minister, says in the first incident, violence broke out on Friday evening when an unidentified man from Rumbek East County killed another man from Rumbek Central County. He says the attack triggered deadly violence between two clans of the Dinka community.
The person from a clan called DA of Rumbek East County killed a person from a clan called Banyon from Rumbek Central County, and the cause was a revenge killing. That happened in the evening. Following morning, the two groups collected themselves and they fought.
Majak says gunmen from both sides were firing rifles at each other, leaving several people either dead or injured.
The results were on the side of VA, 5 were killed and 7 wounded. And on the side of Panyon, 4 were killed and 5 wounded.
In a separate attack on Sunday, Majak says he was told by eyewitness that several people were killed and injured in Ural West County. He says he's yet to receive the exact casualty figures. iRadio quotes County Commissioner Quoch Diu as saying gunmen attacked a camp in Pabo over the weekend and stole several heads of cattle. Majak says the state government dispatched security forces to the affected areas to stop the fighting. Revenge and counter-revenge killings between local communities in Lake States are too common. In early April, Lake State officials say 150 people were killed in a cattle raid in Rumbek North County. And just last month, state officials say 12 people were killed and more than 20 others wounded during intercommunal clashes between sections of Dinka communities in Rumbek East County. Majak condemned the nearly continuous cycle of deadly revenge attacks in Rumbek North. He is urging the state's politicians and elders to promote peace in the area. Majak is also calling on local leaders to avoid making public statements that could escalate the tensions in these communities. That report was prepared by Charlton Doki in Juba. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a South Sudanese woman who made her mark in the U.S. as a successful model and musician is now focusing her talent on helping South Sudanese children. Find out how when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the strangest food that you have ever eaten?
I have ever eaten crocodile's meat, but I didn't know it was crocodile meat. Yeah, it was in a hotel. It would not be fair to mention the name of the hotel here.
I think I ate spring rolls, mixture of onions, carrots, green pepper. Yeah, because I haven't eaten it since, ever.
It is the sheep. I've never eaten the pork and the sheep. The sheep, when I ate, I vomit, so I've stopped eating. But the pork, if I eat, it itches me. Now I've stopped even eating.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations mission in South Sudan, or UNMIS, says its top official in Unity State has been expelled. And Ms. Acting Spokesman Joseph Contreras says Unity State officials have not said why they want Mary Cummins to be relieved of her duties in the state, but local media are speculating that Cummins is being expelled because of a report released last month by UNMISS. Waki Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
Cummins is the Unity State Coordinator for UNMISS. Contreras says she was not in Unity State when officials ordered her expulsion last week.
The Unity State government has expressed a view that the peacekeeping mission's top official in that state, Mary Cummins, should not return to her duty station in Bentiu. We are engaging with national authorities as well as senior Unity State government officials to clarify the situation.
Contreras says Unity State officials have not explained why they want Cummins out. But he says there is speculation that the move is related to an UNMISS report released last month.
We've seen media reports that they are linking this position of theirs to the release of the peacekeeping mission's recent human rights report on human rights abuses committed in Southern Unity State.
UNMISS alleges in its report that government forces raped women and girls, burnt people alive, and abducted and murdered civilians in Unity State between April and June of this year. Cummins' expulsion comes a month after the South Sudan government expelled the UN humanitarian coordinator, Toby Lanza, from the country. Lanza was out of the country when his expulsion was announced. A government official says Lanza was expelled over a comment he made about South Sudan's collapsing economy. Maiwen McCall is the spokesman for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. He says the ministry is unaware of the decision by Unity State to expel Cummins. McCall says his office is trying to establish
what happened to that person, what have we done, and the way we can communicate with the Unity State to try to see the reasons for the expulsion of the UN personnel and then get some information about that.
Unity State is one of the states that has been hardest hit by the conflict in South Sudan. The state capital, Bentiu, has changed hands several times between government and rebel forces loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar since the conflict erupted in December 2013. Both sides have been accused of human rights abuses in Bentiu during the 19-month conflict. Contreras says UNMISS operations in Unity State are continuing as normal. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The governor of Unity State denies that his state has expelled the UNMISS state coordinator. But Joseph Montuil says the State Council of Ministers has launched an investigation into the UNMISS report. He told me earlier today that he believes the UNMISS Unity State coordinator should stay away from Bentiu in order to allow government to complete a thorough investigation into the alleged human rights violations reported by UNMISS in Unity State. Nigeria's President Muhammad Buhari is expected to visit neighboring Cameroon sometime in the coming weeks. Christine reports from VOA's regional bureau in Dakar on what can be expected when these two neighboring heads of state, which have not always gone, meet later this month.
Nigeria and Cameroon have butted heads before. Their most notable spat was over who owned the oil-rich Bekasi Peninsula on the coastal border. The spread of the Boko Haram insurgency from Nigeria into Cameroon has drawn the two countries together again. While the Islamist insurgent group's stated goal is to establish strict Islamic law in Nigeria's northeast, it has attacked northern Cameroon repeatedly and is thought to keep rear bases on its territory. President Buhari has pledged to defeat Boko Haram and is putting together a task force of troops from neighboring states to defeat the group. Mr. Buhari has already visited Chad and Niger, both of which have been attacked by the group, and has said he will visit President Paul Biya in Cameroon. President Buhari, a Muslim, is expected to make the trip after Ramadan ends this week. A senior research fellow at the Institute for Security Studies in South Africa, David Zunmeno, says Mr. Buhari will not be able to achieve the victory he campaigned on without Cameroon's help.
I think Cameroon and Nigeria understand very well the porosity of the border and the capacity of the organization of Boko Haram to move from one point to the other.
Zunmeno says this summit will focus on turning over a new leaf between the newly elected President Buhari and President Biya, who has been in office since 1982.
It will be very important to restate the engagement of Nigeria to cooperate with Cameroon at different levels to be able to respond effectively to the threat of Boko Haram, to put aside the differences that emerge from the Bakassi dispute and see where Cameroon and Nigeria need to strengthen their relations.
The regional task force will be based in Chad, but commanded by a Nigerian. Chris Stein for VOA News, Dakar.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. Malaysian police announced today they will investigate the investigators who are looking into allegations that millions of dollars from a state fund were channeled into the bank account of Prime Minister Najib Razak. Malaysia's Police Inspector General Khalid Abu Bakar says officers will try to determine who leaked classified documents to foreign nationals and whether the materials are genuine or doctored. The Wall Street Journal on July 3rd, citing documents from a government probe, reported that $700 million may have moved through agencies and companies linked to 1MDB, owned by the government of Malaysia, before being deposited into accounts bearing the Prime Minister's name. Much of the money reportedly flowed into Prime Minister Najib's accounts before the last general election. However, it's unclear what happened to the money afterwards. High-level meetings are underway on the last designated day for Iranian nuclear negotiations in Vienna, with intense speculation but no official indication that a deal will soon be announced. In brief comments to the media within the last 24 hours, several top diplomats involved in brokering the accord said important issues remain to be resolved ahead of the self-imposed deadline. Iran, Britain, China, France, Germany, Russia, and the United States, along with the EU's foreign minister, have missed three similar deadlines since June 30th without achieving a final deal. And finally, Pope Francis flew home to Rome from Paraguay on Sunday, ending a week-long three-nation visit to South America. The first South American pontiff reinforced his place as spokesman for the world's disenfranchised by visiting a flood-prone slum on the shores of the Paraguay River in the capital of Asunción. Many of the residents are squatters who live in the barrio's plywood and corrugated metal shacks. Francis told the 15,000 inhabitants to stay united in their struggle for better living and working conditions. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Nearly 2 years of conflict have ruined South Sudan's education system, which was already not doing well. As Mungume Debs Rwakarinj reports for VOA News from Juba, the fighting has forced tens of thousands of children to stay out of school.
At St. Joseph's Primary School in Juba, children head home each day at 3 p.m. Okot Santos, the deputy headmaster of the school, says this was not the normal routine before the conflict began nearly 2 years ago. Students, especially those about to sit for national exams, would usually study for long hours or revise their work on lessons with peers and teachers. Santos remembers one incident back in March when a parent came to pick up his child to go home to Monoki.
The parent of a child in class 8 been sought off by the border, and this has affected the child psychologically in the learning. The support the parents used to give, these supports are now withdrawn. This will affect the progress of the child in learning and even to go further.
Santos says this was traumatic not just for the one child, but for more than 1,300 children studying at the school. And he says insecurity has consequences for the children's future performance.
The candidate classes are always depart late to go home by 5 or 5.30. Because of the fear people have and the distances they have, we stop at 3. This limits the numbers of hours for learning. When you look at the overall effect, it will affect education. The coverage will not be enough. The children will do examination when the syllabus is incomplete.
Natalie Fiona Hamudi, UNICEF specialist for emergency education, agrees. She says teachers have been equally affected by the conflict. Some of them have been forced to abandon their schools and flee their communities, putting
more pressure on already strained teaching staffs.
There was already about 1 million children who were out of school, which we were trying to bring back to learning. But the fighting in the Free State had created more dropouts. So more than 500,000 children have dropped out of school in mainly Free State, Jonglei, Upper Nile, and Unity. And close to 1,200 schools have closed in this Free State.
UNICEF says more than 80 schools are still being occupied by soldiers on both sides who store artillery in the school buildings. Even before the conflict began, the literacy rate in the country was dismal. According to the National Bureau of Statistics, the national literacy rate in 2013 stood at only 27% in South Sudan. The primary school enrollment rate was just 47%, and barely 10% of those students completed their studies. Last year, UNICEF launched a USAID-funded program called the Back to Learning Campaign. It is a project, Hamudi says, has helped at least 100,000 children resume their studies. She says UNICEF needs at least $12 million to construct temporary schools and to hire teaching staff. Hamudi says, despite the continued fighting, children must still be able to go to school.
The education is a wonderful opportunity to address a lot of issues, social cohesion, peace. I mean, the children need to know that, the people need to know that their children will have a future.
Both Santos and Hamudi believe the only way for the South Sudanese children to achieve their aspirations is for the conflict to end. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
Young South Sudanese are growing up all over the world with dreams of becoming humanitarians, doctors, models, or musicians. At the age of 31, one South Sudanese American has managed to attain three of these goals. South Sudan in Focus reporter Ayen Bior has details.
That's the track Love is the Way by DJ Stiletto. But before she was known by that stage name, her friends and family called her Mary Malek. Music has always played a big role in Malek's life. When she was growing up in her hometown of Wau during South Sudan's Second Civil War, it was music that helped her and her family escape the fear and violence of war, at least for a little while.
As a family, we got together probably a couple of times a week during dinner or after dinner and put on music. And, you know, all the children would start dancing and we will have, like, dance competitions. And that's basically how the music started from within me. It was a sort of a getaway that helped us heal in bad time. And it just stuck with me. And now it's something that I'm doing.
Malek was 15 in 1998 when she and her family became refugees in the United States. She resettled in New Jersey with her family and eventually moved to New York City in 2006 to become a model. She has been featured in Vogue, Elle, and Vanity Fair magazine, but that success was not enough for Malek. She says she's always had the desire to create music. So when she spent time in Manhattan, met creative people, and heard new music, she knew that's what she wanted to do. Malek eventually teamed up with the production crew, House of Mew, to develop her music career. Her latest album, House of Mew Birth, was released in August 2014. But a successful modeling and music career was not enough for this South Sudanese native. Malek says her ultimate goal is to bring education to South Sudan.
All of us are South Sudanese who have escaped the war and the one who are still in South Sudan. I think the number one cause for us to leave, our parents tell us that we need to take you children out of here so you can get a better education.
In 2014, Malek founded Stand for Education, a New York-based nonprofit that helps students in South Sudan get access to school supplies. Malek says educating South Sudan's youth is the most important task to be accomplished in her native country.
Doing workshops, personal hygiene, and seminars for self-esteem, and basically bringing awareness for education, especially in South Sudan, because South Sudan faces the worst literacy rates in the world. And me coming from South Sudan, it makes so much more sense to focus on starting the work within my country.
The World Bank estimates only 27% of South Sudan's population is literate. And of that amount, very few are women or girls. Malek stands ready to do her part.
Over 50% are children in South Sudan who have no access to education or quality education. And what I'm doing with the organization is paving a way where we can promote quality education, partnering with existing schools in South Sudan and helping them become, you know, more sustainable.
Malek says she is convinced that South Sudan will not grow or become a successful, peaceful nation unless its citizens are able to read and write. She says as a member of the diaspora, she feels it's her responsibility to go back and help young South Sudanese.
Our country has been going to war since a long time, over two decades. But I just feel like we are such strong people that no matter where we're at, where we go, we always remember that we have to go back home and help our people.
Malek says the ongoing crisis only makes her more determined to make her dream a reality.
Knowing what's happening in South Sudan with the children, with my own family, and still having family who are suffering until this day, even though we're now independent, makes me stronger. It makes me feel like, what is my purpose in this world? You know, I'm not supposed to just sit back, escape out of my country and sit back and say, you know what, I'm in a better place, forget it. I want to be able to go back home and live there in peace. And I want my children to be able to go to school in their own home.
Stand for Education's immediate goal is to assist 150 school children in Bor. But Malek says she eventually plans to expand the organization into other cities and towns across South Sudan to make sure South Sudanese children get access to quality education. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
And we have some news just in. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon expressed disappointment at South Sudan's decision to expel senior officials. Speaking to reporters in Addis Ababa, Ban said the UN is consulting with the South Sudanese government over Kamen's expulsion. He said, quote, "At this time, we don't know what's going to happen to our UN staff. But we have been very much disappointed when South Sudan's government decided to ask Toby Lancer to leave, who had been working very hard on the humanitarian situation in South Sudan." Ban was speaking after what he called a productive meeting on South Sudan with Ethiopian Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn and Hosanna Dlamini Zuma, the chairperson of the African Union Commission. And that's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Love is the Way by South Sudanese-born musicians DJ Stiletto featuring Lenin Hallot. We've been listening to DJ Stiletto featuring Lenin Hallot with the song Love is the Way. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Yeah.